politician talking about his brand new mission. Liked his plans, but they came undone when it got around to God and guns. I don't know how he grew up, but it sure wasn't down at the hunting club. 'Cause if it was, he'd understand just a little bit more about the working man. God and guns keep us strong. That's what this country was founded on. Well, we might as well give up and run. If we let them take our God and guns. Yeah, out here in my neck of the woods, where God is great and guns are good, you really can't know that much about them if you think we're better off without them. Oh, there was a time we ain't forgot, you could rest all night. The door's unlocked, but there ain't nobody safe no more. So you say your prayers and you thank the Lord for that peacemaker in the dresser drawer.
Patriot Studios, this is Soldiers of Patriotism.
You there, Brother Bing? And good Sunday afternoon to you, princes and princesses of patriotism. It's Sunday afternoon. That means it's Soldiers of Patriotism time. Brother Bing, are you there? I guess Brother Bing had to step away for a minute.
No, I'm here. I'm here.
There he is. What's going on, brother?
I had a Bing moment, man. I had my mic muted.
That's all right. Hey, that's why I jumped in. You know, it's nobody can see us, so... Yeah, it'd be funny if they could see us when we have our mics muted and we're sitting here talking and getting evangelical and nobody hears a thing.
Yeah, really, man.
That's when you're having one of those brilliant moments.
Yeah, it's brilliant to yourself, but nobody else sees it or hears it. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. Well,
you know, you're pretty much forked out there, but
We went and saw Atlas Shrugged. Tell us about it. Tell us your thoughts on it.
Oh, man. I just felt it was a great movie. It just had everything in it that I think you followed the book pretty well. It had some moments in it that I just thought were fantastic. And I don't want to give away the movie for those that haven't seen it yet, but, you know, when Dagny Taggart basically tells... James Taggart's wife, that she's the man in the family, when Taggart's wife is telling her that she's the woman, I mean, that was great. That brought, like, you know, claps and cheers and stuff. And Francisco D'Anconia had his money rant at the wedding. I thought that was just, it was perfect. And the way they actually opened the movie and the way they actually took everything from the last movie, and you were a step forward in time, and you really didn't need to see the first movie, but I would suggest that you do. I think it, you know, the first movie actually does portray some things that you might not get, but yeah, it was a great, it was a filled theater, man. The front row seats were empty, but nobody sits in those seats anyway. They're the cheap seats, you know.
Do you have the Danconia monologue from the Taggart Wedding?
Yes, I do. I got the whole thing, but I'm just going to quote a certain part.
You can do it.
We can discuss that.
Yeah, you got it.
You have to understand, Francisco de Anconia he owned a copper mine, I believe.
Yeah.
Michael, and he actually in the movie he quit. You know, the whole premise of the movie is when the looters, as I call them, the moochers and the looters take over the businesses, then the people that produce things quit. And then everybody blames, you know, this person, that person. They blame, you know, the businessmen for not fulfilling their goals. And the government sits there and says, look, you know, we want more of your money. You got to get us everything. Okay, so that we have control of you, the people that are producing. And when he got out there and he said, basically, I don't know exactly what he said because it's not in the movie, but in Ayn Rand's book, Francisco, in the middle of this wedding where everybody is sitting there trying to celebrate, you know, this fake wedding, really, you know, with a lot of high-class moochers, really, at this wedding. And James Taggart is a moocher, too. He's the brother of Dagny Taggart. And Francisco gets up there and he says, so you think that money is the root of all evil? Have you ever asked what is the root of money? Money is a tool of exchange, which can't exist unless there are goods produced and men able to produce them. Money is the material shape of the principle that men who wish to deal with one another must deal by trade and give value for value. Money is not the tool of the moochers who claim your product by tears or by the looters or who take it from you by force. Money is made possible only by the men who produce. Is this what you consider evil? When you accept money in payment for your effort, you do so only on the conviction that you will exchange it for the product of the effort of others. It is not the moochers and the looters who give value to money. Not an ocean of tears nor all the guns in the world can transform those pieces of paper in your wallet into the bread you will need to survive tomorrow. Those pieces of paper, which should have been gold, are a token of honor. Your claim upon the energy of the men who produce, your wallet is your statement of hope that somewhere in the world around you, there are men who will not default on that moral principle, which is the root of money. And this is what you consider evil? I mean, you know, we can discuss that, but I mean, that was a pretty powerful statement. And I don't know if that was actually verbatim or verbatim in the movie, but she goes on about, you know, the power of capitalism, you know, that people don't understand what it is to trade things anymore because a lot of people don't understand what money is at its root.
No. And I was just looking because there was a quote that Danconia did, I think, in chapter 4 that I really liked when he talks about when you do, and he's talking about money. Dang it, I wished I could find that quote. Where's my, I got it right here. When he says, the man who obtains money, the man who finds money, essentially, he says, the man who finds money evil has obtained it dishonorably. The man who respects it has earned it. And then he goes on to say, and I think this is in chapter 4, so long as man live together on earth and need, I got to put my glasses on, geez. need means to deal with one another. Their only substitute, if they abandon money, is the muzzle of a gun. And that's what he's in that rant in the movie and in the book that you're talking about now. I mean, it was just brilliant. Amongst all of these liberal fake facade plastic people that were going along. I mean, yeah, they were wealthy, but they were the moochers. They were going along with the government. One can only assume for the same reasons as they do now, and it's to retain power. And Reardon, we don't want to give away the movie, but what Reardon did in the Unification Court was just remarkable, and the common man applauded him.
Oh, yeah. And in that same actual chapter, I think, it says, to the glory of mankind there was, for the first and only time in history, a country of money, and I have no higher, more relevant tribute to pay to America for this means, a country of reason, justice, freedom, protection, achievement. For the first time, man's mind and money were set free, and there were no fortunes by conquest. But only fortunes by work. And instead of swordsmen and slaves, there appeared the real maker of wealth, the greatest work, the highest type of human being, the self-made man, the American industrialist. And we are forgetting, we are chastising these people, man. We are just, we're trying to obliterate them off the map in favor of some socialistic, Marxist, regime that wants to take and redistribute everything and make everything fair for everybody. See, my dad told me a thing when I grew up, and once in a while he would tell me, he said, son, he said, there's always got to be somebody that's got to screw the lids on the jars. You know?
Yeah.
That's the way it is. If you don't like the job you're in, quit bitching about it. Get out of it. Get something else. You're happy.
The thing. This is the way I look at it. You know, am I ever going to be an industrialist billionaire? Perhaps not. But I esteem to be one.
You don't ever know.
Exactly. You don't ever know. But here's the thing. I esteem to be one. And I have someone in my family that says, why do you care? What do you care about the rich people? Well, here's what I care. I care that the opportunity is there for me to be that successful. That's what I care about.
Right. You have the opportunity to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The thing is that the framers of the Constitution do not guarantee you that you're going to have all the pursuit of happiness. You're not going to be a happy person if you're going to be miserable. And that's, to me, how a liberal is. They're just miserable. I can't sit there and listen to – I just can't listen to them anymore. You know, they just – they make me down. They bring me down. I can't believe how. I don't know if liberals out there are listening to these talk show hosts and these other TV show hosts and so on liberal TV. I'd be shooting myself, man. Seriously, I couldn't take it.
And here's the thing. Here's the difference between us and liberals. Liberals being and really, this is basically kind of what Ayn is talking about. Liberals believe in equality of outcome. We believe in equality of opportunity. We all have the opportunity. Exactly. Barbara says we all have common sense. Exactly, Barbara. Right. We all agree that everyone should have the opportunity, the equality to be a success, to have the opportunity to be successful. What we do with that opportunity is called self-reliance. That is something that liberals can't stand. I just got done with 50 Things That Liberals Love to Hate by Mike Gallagher. And he talks about it a lot. Ayn Rand, you know, there's just... And, you know, here's the other thing, Bing. People think that we conservatives are paranoid. I've had some in my family say, Michael, do you really think the country's going to go in the way of Orwellian future, in the way that Ayn wrote Atlas Shrugged? Is it going to be that bad? No, I don't think it will ever be that bad that we'll actually live in an Orwellian future. But here's the thing. If we don't keep fighting, we will. It will happen if we don't continue to fight.
Well, a lot of things, getting back to the movie, though, because, you know, we're here. This is like the Atlas Shrugged promotional week. And, you know, I'm here not just for the radio show, but I'm also here to promote the movie. And if you guys can see it, man, please go see it. You know, you can view part one on Netflix and so on. And, you know, we'd like to have Harmon back on. I've seen him on Fox this morning. He did a great job. This movie is not going to appeal to everyone, Michael. It's going to appeal to the people that actually get it. You
exactly.
It's not going to appeal to the moochers and the loochers and that kind of thing. And that's what Harmon said in an interview, I think, on Fox or somewhere else, ABC maybe. But, in Alaska just said, we also should have the opportunity to fail.
Well, absolutely. That was
a big freaking point right there, man. That these companies are too. There is no company that's too big to fail. There is none.
Well, and here's the other side of that coin. You know, there's two sides. Everybody, liberals think there's your truth. The liberals think there's your truth, my truth, and the truth. You know, there's three sides to every coin: the heads, the tails, and that little bitty side. But they like to fudge on that little bitty side. There's either you fail or you're a success. And when you take, I say it all the time, when you take away a person's ability to fail, you have to take away the equal opposite of that, and that is their ability to be a success.
Yeah, there is no standard. When my kid gets an F in school, I know what that F means. Okay, you effed up, right?
Yeah, you know, it means you're getting my belt on your bottom.
Yeah, but when they got all these different standards now, where they don't give you an F because they don't want to offend anybody, they don't want to make anybody feel uncomfortable, as Phil Valentine would say. You know, they just don't, you know, it's a PC type thing. And you know what's funny about with this movie and the ratings? And I read some stuff last night. I was looking at box office things with Atlas Shrugged, Michael. And the film critics are giving this movie like, you know, a zero rating, basically. Thumbs down, this and that. But 78% of the people that attended the movie give it a good rating. Great rating.
Well, they did the same thing.
That just shows you where critics are on the scale of liberalism versus conservatism.
And what about Sean Hannity's debut?
Yeah.
In the movie. I thought he did pretty good.
Now the girl, I didn't know exactly who she was.
I don't know who she was.
Yeah, I read her name, but I'm wanting to find the actor to play. Okay, when Dagny, I don't want to give away the movie, man, but the guy that worked for the Motors Corporation.
Yeah.
When she was on the train. American Motors. Who was that actor? I'm trying to figure out who he was. Oh. He had a bit part. It was very quick. But anyways, that might be a trivia question later if anybody wants to research that. He had a beard, and I've seen him before, and I just don't know.
Which, by the way, are we looking at perhaps a giveaway in the show today at some point?
Yeah, we got two T-shirts we're going to give away today. So,
all right. Just real quickly, before we bring in Virginia, there is one thing I wanted to mention that kind of ties into the release of Atlas Shrugged and Obama and moving towards an Orwellian future. Last week, I kind of had a surprise. We had open enrollment to redo our insurance at work company I've been with for 6 years now, and I'm not faulting my company, and I guess I'm really not faulting the insurance company. You know, everybody's doing what they have to do to fall in line with the regulations that we're going to be faced with next year with Obamacare. Now, I had a $700 a year monthly out-of-pocket on my deductible for my family, which meant that I had to make a $700, you know, to reach a certain level, and a $4,000 maximum, at which point then the insurance kicked in at 100%. My deductible and my max out-of-pocket went from 700 to 2400 for my family, and from 4000 to 7000. Now, based on mine and my wife's income, we're not wealthy. We make a comfortable living, but we're not by any means wealthy. You know, we're just we're not even middle class, you know. But we manage our money well, and you know, we do what we have to do. This constitutes a 21.59%. I did the math on it. Essentially, a 21.59% tax hike on me is essentially what it is. This is money, more money I have to come up with out of money that I feed and clothe my children with, put a roof over their head, to now have to pay towards deductibles and to reach my max out of pocket. And I was due to get a colonoscopy and an upper GI next year. And I was thinking, okay, I'm only going to have to pay $4,000 to get all of that done, and then I'm done. I don't have to pay any more for that, or, you know, because the colonoscopy itself's more than $4,000. And I know that I've got polyps that need to be removed, and I need to have that upper GI done. And, you know, now I'm faced with a $7,000 out of pocket. So I know I'm preaching to the choir with everybody that's on here in the round table and everybody that's in the chat rooms, both of the chat rooms. But we need to make sure that people understand exactly those people that do not agree with us exactly. If you don't know for yourself firsthand, you say, look, I got a buddy. I know he just had open enrollment, and I know this man wouldn't lie to me, and here's the numbers that I can put to it. That's a $4,400 a year increase to my out-of-pocket.
Well, when you don't pass the bill before, or don't read the bill before you pass it, what do you expect? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, who were they fooling? They knew exactly what was going on here. Exactly.
Well, let's bring in our buddy. We're very honored today to have our friend from over in Dallas, good friend of mine and Bing's and all of y'all's, Virginia Proden. You all know Virginia. Virginia is our friend that escaped death under the totalitarian dictatorship in Orwellian future of Ceausescu in Romania. And y'all probably all familiar with her YouTube video. She's got it, and I put it in the chat room, American Thinker /2012/10/M-socialism_against_gold_guns_and_god. Just type in socialism against God or gold, guns, and God. On the American Thinker website, and you'll find an article penned by Virginia Proden, our good friend. Virginia, welcome back to Soldiers of Patriotism. Bing and I are more than excited to have you back on to talk about your latest piece.
Oh, thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. I'm very excited to tell people what socialism is all about. I believe that a lot of Americans, especially the young generation, they have no clue about what socialism is. If you look at them in the college level, maybe even high school, some of them even in the profession area, they believe that socialism is like going to daycare for a few hours and then you go home and you have everything that you have under capitalism. Freedom, freedom of expression, and freedom and opportunities, you know, to pursue your dreams and so forth. And they're so wrong about this. And I don't blame them, because the professors at the colleges and even now from the elementary school, they brainwash them to believe that the capitalist is not good, that being a responsible individual is not, that everything you can accomplish is by collectivism, which is socialist part of ideology. So, but I have to say, Michael, that I'm very impressed that the majority, I will say, of young people, when they are exposed to reality, when I speak in different places, by my YouTube or even the article that I had in American Tinker, Socialists Against God, Gold Guns and God, many of them will call, email, or put things on the website saying, I never knew about this. I am so frightened that what I was told, it was a lie, and I am not going to go with this. Many of them said, I'm going to vote for freedom in this election. I don't want that kind of society. So what I believe is our role is just to let them hear, you know, the reality of socialism.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I'm listening to you, but I'm also dealing with someone in the chat room, Virginia.
I already got him, Michael.
Okay.
And Mr. 11, he just likes to antagonize and ask stupid questions that have no relevance to what we're talking about. But, I can smell it. It's kind of like the Kid Rock song. I can smell a pig a mile away. I can smell a troll, you know, a mile away. So
Virginia, I'm sorry, Bing. Go ahead and elaborate on the guns, the gold, and I mean, I know where you're coming from with that, and I know what it's from. I know it's your video, but explain to folks what Ceausescu did, number one. Go ahead.
Okay, first of all, I want to tell them that socialism is a false ideology. It's against, totally against the American capitalist system ideology. We Americans believe in free markets and individual freedom, you know, like you said, in opportunities. But socialism replaces free market with government control, which means that you and I am not going to have freedom to make the decisions, but the government. We give 100% control to the government if we choose socialist system. Socialist system also eradicates private property, freedom of speech. If you believe that you will be allowed to criticize the government, socialist government, or the leader under socialist government, forget about it, you're going to be in jail. That's not going to be freedom of press. The press will be controlled by the government, not only the liberal press, the entire press. Religious rights, they will be eradicated under a socialist system. You do not have the right to go to church. Self-determination as a nation, no. We do not talk about our country being able to do whatever the country or people want. We will be under the control of United Nations or other countries. So those are very, very drastic changes in our lives. And I want to say that when our dictator was elected, which he was elected by people, in Romania, is because he was very clever, he was very charming, he knew how to talk, he knew how to promise people different things, and he got elected. So don't look at the words of the person who promotes something, hope and change and other things. Look at the actual things that that person for 4 years has done and will do next. Well, socialism, I say it's against your gold, against your wealth. We'll take we'll confiscate your work and we'll distribute to other citizens, but not according to what we think is right, but according to what the leaders will believe is right. If you are a member of their party, you will receive more. If you are not, then you might not receive anything. Well, socialists will destroy productivity. If you believe that people that work hard and they make, you know, create companies and do whatever it takes, you know, to produce something, will continue to produce, and at the end, everything they produce will be the government. Forget about it. It's not going to be that. And also, socialism will destroy individual self-worth, because you are not going to be allowed to express yourself, to create things, and to do anything, because the government will tell you how much you can work, how much you can receive from your work. It might be 30%, 25% or less. In the name of sharing, justice and equality, that we hear, fair share, justice and equality and everything. Well, if you look at the past history, socialist turns most of its people equally into poor people, while the elite leaders enjoy a lavish lifestyle.
That's so true.
It's not equality. And socialism is also against guns. You know, Ceausescu, in the name of all humanitarian purpose, too many kids were killed, too many people by accident were killed by established gun control in Romania. And when he established gun control, guess what? He established also a special police system called Securitate that was above the law, control and silence everyone, including the media, has a power over every person to put in jail. If you have the audacity to criticize them, you'll lose your job or you'll be killed. Not only that, those group of people have the power, but because of the fear and control that they created around them, they created informants out of people. And many people, because of the fear that they have, they're not going to be able to keep the job or the house or whatever else, they will spy on others. Is this kind of country that you want? I don't think so, but many people don't know this. Well,
Virginia, I got a question.
Yes.
With Ceausescu, how many people do you think he actually killed? Because that's another arm of socialism and communism, is if you don't agree with them, they'll put you in jail, they'll kill you, they'll exile you, they'll do whatever they can to keep you shut. And
yes.
I'm just wondering, you lived there. How many people do you think he killed?
I know for sure that he did more than Hitler did with his own, you know, with Jewish people. He killed more than Hitler did. So I can't tell. I don't have the numbers, but I know that I have found those statistics. And they were talking about Ceausescu, who killed people more than Hitler.
And we trade with a communist country called China that has killed, 200 million people of their own people? Killed.
Mm-hmm.
And we trade with them. And that's
perfectly
fine.
Romania is not the size of China. But if you think about how many people disappear, how many people were killed, how many intellectuals, when the communists conquered Romania, were against communists. And because of that, they disappeared, they were killed, that they were just destroyed. That was, and by doing this, the system establishes fear in the hearts of others, watching all these people that raise their voice and said something disappear. So people will live in a fear. If you think that you know everything is going to be okay, some of young people have this idea. When I talk with them, the last resort, they will say, but I think in America, when we try communist or socialist, it's going to be different. No, I do not believe so, because socialism and communism, they work with those ideas, and they apply everywhere they have. There's nothing that will change. So
no, it's sort of hand in hand, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Well, also you have to take into consideration that socialism is against God. They don't believe that there is a God. They don't believe that there is a Bible. And when you eliminate God and Bible, that the leader is your God, the Communist Manifesto is your Bible. So you have no sin, no moral values. You talk about a few minutes ago about the fact that everybody has his own truth or her own truth. Now, if you don't have eternal values like we have, because God gave us in the Bible, as he gave us the freedom, then whatever advanced the socialist philosophy was morally to them. Killing the people that will talk against them was moral, because you protect the socialists. Taking somebody's property because they speak against you was morally, because they speak bad against the system. Not giving a job to somebody who does not want to be a socialist, but you give it to somebody who is a socialist but doesn't have the skill, it's again morally. So you can find out, you know, I mean, by those examples, what kind of society it's going to be.
Well, and Karl Marx said religion is the opium of the people, you know. So that's why they don't like religion, because they know that people will claim, well, same thing like this president said. You know, these conservatives cling to God, guns, and the Bible, and so on. And, you know, is that a bad thing? You know, I mean, I'm just sitting here shaking my head, going, you know, but I wanted to touch on something here real quick. Now you're a lawyer that helps people get into this country legally, right? You have a law firm, or you're a lawyer.
Yes,
you're a lawyer that helps people get into this country legally, right?
Yeah, I was a lawyer in Romania, and I came as a political refugee, and President Reagan gave me the political visa, and I'm
How do you feel about illegal immigrants now? You know. And people, you know, that I guess are representing them, demanding them that they have or they should be able to vote without a voter's ID card?
No, I don't believe so. I last week I had an interview with the BBC on immigration in America, and it will be on the air on the 23rd, so I will be more than happy to put it on my website, virginiapradhan.net, for everybody to listen to the BBC program. I am an immigration lawyer, and I do immigration for people who come legally in this country. That's the way it is. I do believe that we should have an ID so we can protect from everybody's tendency to lie or against fraud or anything else. I do not believe that when we said for fraud protection we need an ID, that we think that liberals are doing something or you know, somebody else is doing it. It is puzzling to me that wherever you go and for driving, even if you go to your children's school, you have to have an ID in order to go inside of the school. So just to visit your kids, and in order to vote, which is such an important privilege and also obligation, there is so much discussion about having an ID. I believe it's why these people are against it, because they don't want people that are not allowed to vote to vote.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Right. If you're against the voter ID law, then to me, you are for voter fraud, period. There's no logical explanation behind it in my mind.
No.
In my mind. It's so easy to go out there and get a voter's ID card. It's so easy to get everybody pretty much has a license. In some states, you have some kind of license or some kind of photo ID card. So where are we disenfranchising people? See? Yeah. And to me, if you are against voter ID, you are for voter fraud. And that's just the way it is.
You know, it's so interesting that in order, I didn't go to the Democratic Party convention, obviously, but I heard many radio stations, television, and people on Facebook approving, you know, evidence that when you had to go there, you had to go and to have an ID. So why are they ready to protect themselves when they meet together so nobody will go there, that they might not be Democrats? So they are for some form of ID to protect themselves. But when it comes to vote, they are not for. And in the same time, I believe that it's important for us as a country, because people will respect us if we respect and apply the law. Nobody's going to respect us, and people will do all kind of things if we close our eyes to one law or another law.
Voting is the most, it's the greatest thing that we could do. That is our inherent right. You know, that is how we change things. And,
yes.
You know, when these people want to sit there and they're just trying to gnaw away at the flesh of America and keep taking away the rights and keep trying to explain them off on some other kind of nonsense that they come up with, that we're disenfranchising people or something. But this is the most sacred right we have in this country. I know when my dad came here from East Germany, the first thing he wanted to do was to be able to become a citizen so he could vote and participate. And I remember him having to take two different schools at night to learn language and everything else. And when I see these people that just want this for free, like they get the Obama phones for free, it's sickening me. It just makes
me absolutely. But I want to mention one thing, that everything is a mask, because if they win the election and if the Obamacare goes on, in the Obamacare there are rules that will say that we will have a national ID card for the Obamacare, because they want to control, and based on that, they will have access, the government will have access to our banking account, that in case we don't want to pay the insurance that we are obligated to pay, that instead of, going after us and everything, they will take money directly from our banking account. So right now, in order to gain votes for people, they will say, we don't want ID, we don't want. But if you read inside right now the way the law, Obamacare is, that law has inside not the voter ID, national ID, that will be for everything. Because by that time, they will not care who's going to vote for them or not. By that time, the government is on. It's not going to be, I believe, another free election.
Yep.
Michael, Virginia,
you think it's about time we get some other people in here?
Well, yeah, yes. I wanted to do one thing, and then we'll do a PSA. for Atlas Shrugged. And you know, I'm sitting here listening to this, Bing, and I know it seems like everything here lately kind of directs back to Atlas Shrugged, but to listen to Virginia talk, the words that she's using, I'm thinking about the movie and that I watched yesterday, the book that I'm reading for the second time. Words just, they're jumping out at me that and of course, you know, Anne Virginia comes from a very similar background that Anne came from. And, you know, it's just so amazing. Virginia lived what Anne wrote about, which Anne lived, that we take for granted. And Virginia...
Oh, yeah. It's hard, I think, to understand. I think you can write about socialism and communism and all these dictators all day long, but I don't think that people truly understand it unless they visit a country or live there.
Well, and here's the thing, Bing, that I think about. You know, people say, Michael, do you really think that can happen here? Virginia, I'd be willing to bet dollars to donuts that you never thought it could happen in Romania.
Because people have hope, but you have to look beyond hope. You have to look at the action of a leader. You know,
I mean, I bet when Ceausescu came in, or before Ceausescu came in, people were probably having the same discussion. Oh, it'll never get that bad. It'll never happen. We won't lose our freedoms. I mean, I'm sure people had that same discussion.
Yes, but I'm saying one thing, Michael. Well, socialism and communism at that time was young. And I try to give credit to people saying, well, it will never happen because they didn't have too much history. But now we have history. We have history of how they conquered the land. We have history in how they kill people if you don't agree with them. We have a situation now in Europe that everything that's going on right now is because communist socialism was there for 40, 70 years. Socialism destroys everything. And people should look at history and realize that, yes, that's the way it goes. And we have so many, you kind of have to be blind and not to understand. And I believe the ones that will say it will never happen here are the ones that don't want to admit, because if you admit and you believe that there is a problem, then you have to come out, you have to acknowledge the problem, and you have to take a position. And it's very easy to deny it. Just go and watch, Dancing with the Stars or American Idol or something else. And just forget about. But denying it doesn't mean that it's not happening here. And we have so many examples. I mean, very, very, very many examples. So I also say, Michael, that I'm encouraging a lot of people. They're watching my YouTubes or my articles and everything. Somebody says yesterday in an email to me, because at the end of the article, that's my email, they said, oh, my gosh, Mitt Romney should have you on the stage anytime he goes to other TV because you explain so well that we need to run away from socialism.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe all we can do is in love and hearing their questions, just give them a chance, explain to them what socialism is going to be like, how life is going to change, and let them make the decision. And I'm encouraged lots of them make a good decision. I got a call a few days ago from a girl from a lady from California, and she called me and she was crying. I didn't know why, but she explained to me that my YouTube and my article help her to understand, and she changed her mind, and she's going to vote for Romney. And I was happy for her. I didn't understand why she was crying. But she continued, and she said, my mom died this year, and all her life she tried really hard to convince me about socialism, about, you know, Democrats and liberals, and to help me to go back to the American values. And I never listened to her. And she said, I feel like I need to call you to let you know. I can't let my mom know. She's gone. But at least I can let you know that what my mom couldn't change in my life, you change it in my life. So whatever we do, we have to continue. And you never know how you know, your love for freedom, my explanation of what socialism is. I don't run for a political office. I don't gain anything from this, but I feel like I'm responsible because American people is the greatest one, the most charitable, you know, people in the world. We help everybody, and we brought freedom and free market to so many places all over the world. And I feel like it's paid back to me. American people helped me so much, and I'm giving back to the American people. Let them know how horrible socialism is going to be. And many of them respond positive and come to our side. And I'm very, very helpful. All we need to do is do our part. We can make the decisions for them.
Yep.
But, you know, with your radio, with everything that each one of you are doing, you are putting a puzzle in the real picture of socialism, and which is amazing.
Well, and for those people that don't want to take a side, like you were just talking about, Virginia, you know, the middle is always evil. You know, anyone that takes a side, whether if I agree, disagree with them, at least they chose a side. And they know that they at least have respect for the truth by their ability to accept a side.
Yeah.
But they may be wrong, but they accept responsibility for there being, you know, two sides. But the person in the middle is evil. You know, the person that says, meet me, you know, meet, as Ann says, meet the thinker and the fool need to meet one another halfway. You know, that's an evil person. Because majority of the time, my life experience has been that it's black and white. There's very little gray.
Yeah.
You know, it's black, especially where we're at now with, you know, the choice between Romney and Obama. It's black and white. There is no meeting in the middle. There's no meeting with the left in the middle anymore. It's that serious. You know, we're fighting to just maintain America. They're fighting to take us in a change the fundamental way business is done, is what Obama said. Well,
yeah.
You know,
the independent and the moderates that are sitting on the fence that still can't figure this election out don't realize that there's a moat on each side of the fence. You know what I mean? They just don't realize it.
Well, let's
do this. That's sad.
It's very sad, Bing. And the bad part about it is there's alligators in those moats, and we're all going to get our ass bit off if our side doesn't win by the alligators that are in those moats.
That's true.
Go ahead, real quick, Virginia. Go ahead.
I just want to say, I want to share something. I watch in Romania people being destroyed for the rest of their lives and feeling guilty for the rest of their lives because they had an opportunity to fight for what is right, but they chose, like you said, the middle. They did not want to make a decision. But for the rest of their lives, they were not able to live like humans. They were so beaten up by the guilt. And I don't want anybody to live that kind of life. never in the United States or in another part of the country. There is a time right now when we have to fight, and there might be a time where fighting might cost your own life. So make a decision, because if you cannot fight right now, when you don't lose your life, and wait until that time, it might be too late.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, I believe that freedom is worth fighting for.
It absolutely is. I look at the three little faces that get up every morning that I take to school or get ready for school and think, right there is why I do what I do.
That's correct.
Does Bing and Harry and Rick and everybody else that's here or in the chat room, you know, and same with you. Hey, let's do a couple of PSAs real quick, and then it'll take about 4 minutes, and then come back and bring everybody on and open up the round table, because we're at the top of our second hour, and which leaves us about 45 minutes or so, roughly, in real time to get the folks on to talk with you. Okay, Virginia?
Yes.
All right, stand by, guys.
Protect the security of our fellow citizens. For the duration of the national emergency, that the statutes of Directive 10289 shall remain in effect. All copyrights shall be transferred to the federal government. All wages and other forms of income are hereby frozen.
It's all happening so fast.
I won't be a slave.
You say you and Henry Reardon found it?
A device harvesting limitless energy without fossil fuels.
We're so close to having something they won't be able to fight.
They will try like hell to stop you.
Ms. Taggart, I think everyone agrees that capitalism doesn't work.
You don't understand the power they have.
The government takes what they want and taxes what they leave behind.
One of these days, you're going to have to decide which side you're on.
It's obvious that drastic measures have to be taken.
If you saw Atlas,
knees buckling, arms trembling, but still trying to hold up the world with the last of his strength, what would you tell him to do?
Where are they? Anyone who could make a difference.
I'm sitting next to him.
I've only got one thing left worth fighting for. This.
If you feel you have the right to use force against me, bring guns.
Time is running out.
Who or what is John Gall? Is he even a man?
Or an idea?
Are you ready?
When a call for a medic went out, Alan left a covered position to run to render aid. That was when he was hit.
The bullet struck him on the right side between his body armor.
Say a prayer for peace.
Alan was one of the first wounded warriors to come out of Iraq in 2003. I'm Trace Atkins, and I want to tell you about Wounded Warrior Project and how they helped this brave young man and his family.
There was life in his eyes, but everything else was non-responsive.
The doctors anticipated that Alan would be bedridden and need to be spoon-fed for the rest of his life.
The job of helping wounded warriors rebuild their lives is massive and growing every day. Your gift of just $19 a month will help wounded warriors like Alan, who refuse to give up.
I'm in the fields of Vietnam, the mountains of Afghanistan.
Alan earned the Purple Heart and the Bronze Star for his actions on the battlefield. He is a true American hero. But Alan became my hero for the battle he fought day after day after day to get his life back.
Your call today and a gift of $19 a month can help provide our wounded warriors with desperately needed programs and services through Wounded Warrior Project.
I would encourage you to donate to the Wounded Warrior Project.
going to take a lot of us for a long time to help these young men and women.
Call or go online with a pledge of $19 a month and you'll receive this Wounded Warrior Project blanket.
Wounded Warrior Project, all I can really say is thank you. Thank you for being there and giving me something to achieve.
Say a prayer for peace.
Brother Bing, folks, as you probably know, that first PSA, Bing and I are pushing hard. Bing, this might be an opportunity to do one of the two giveaways. Up to you, brother. But that first one, Bing and I are pushing hard. Atlas Shrugged. You guys may or may not know, Bing and I, introduced me to Ayn Rand and urged me to read her. I'm on my second time around now reading it within the last 2 weeks. Watched both part one and part two yesterday. I'm in love with me some Ayn Rand. I already finished Anthem. Doing Atlas Shrugged again. And I've got Fountainhead queued up for whenever I finish this next read. I'm probably about 60 hours out from being done with Atlas Shrugged again, Bing. But and then I'm going to do the Fountainhead. And then I'm going to take a break from Ayn Rand. I want to do Mugged by Ann Coulter. And then that second one, folks, as you all know, I'm a vet, and Wounded Warrior Projects is one of my pet things that I like to push. If you've got a buck or two, those heroes that came back without a leg or two or with no legs and no arms, whatever, they need your help. Send them a dollar or two to Wounded Warrior Projects. It goes a long way to help in that cause. Bing, let's start opening up some mics. We've got Virginia Proden on. Folks, our phone number is 718-305-7176. Again, that is 718-305-7176. I am Michael B., along with my partner, Uncle Bing Fisher, both of us from our respective Patriot Studio bunkers. Mine somewhere in Texas, Bing's somewhere in Tennessee. Brother, why don't you take the mic while I start getting some mics opened up here? And we've got Kurt on. We've got Kurt. We've got Sue. We got Brother Rick. We got our brother Harry, and we've got our special guest Virginia on today. I'm sure that they've got questions for her. So. Let's see here. Yes, you can Skype in as well. You can hit that. Absolutely right, Brother Rick. Rock and Roll Rick's on with us, saying, Michael, you might let him know you can Skype in. From the page that y'all are on, there's a Skype button. If you hit that little Skype symbol, it will dial us as well. So give us a call. Get in on the act. We love the round table here. Go ahead, Bing.
Michael, I just want to say, if you're going to read Ann Coulter's book, if you get it in hardcover, does it come with like a tassel of hair that you can flip around every now and then while you're reading it? Or
I'm going to have, I'll have to text her and find out. Twitter her and ask her if she sends it with a. No, I listened to an interview about the book because. Well, prior to doing the audible.com, that's all I did is I sat at my desk and did my job at the bank and then listened to my talk shows all day long that I like to listen to, starting with Mark Davis in the mornings here in the Metroplex, and then moving on to Rush Limbaugh, and then Sean Hannity, and then on the drive home, Mark Levin. Well, I've listened to several interviews, and I kind of go back and forth on Ann. She sometimes kind of bothers me, but this particular book looks like a really good book.
Oh, that's good. I like her too. It's just her style sometimes. I mean, that's her stick. That's her deal.
Exactly.
She's like our friends over at Big Dog Meets the Mafia. They're off the cuff and rough. That's just what you get. But
you gotta love a strong conservative woman, right?
Oh yeah, and a pretty one too, I guess. There's not many pretty liberal women that I know of. But anyways, Yeah, Rick, good show that you had with Toot Sweet yesterday.
Thank you very kindly. Toot Sweet is a good person. And, I mean, it's just so amazing how much music plays a role, you know, in conservatism.
Oh, there's great conservative music out there, man. Yeah, just music in general. But, yeah, that was a good interview, man. It was great. And I was, you know, glad that you were able to give away two T-shirts, which we are going to do today, too, for John Gall T-shirts today.
Yeah, basically, being what had happened was I had basically put out a question on Twitter. The question was, who was the second person in the movie, Alex Rickford 1, to just up and vanish? And no one had gotten that, so Billy and I had gone over to Love and Direct with G-Ski Rocks and the Captain, which comes on a half hour after my show ends, and so we had just given away two shirts there.
Well, that's great. That's great. It helps promote the movie, and, you know, somebody gets value for value, so, that's all good. That's all good. Harry, how are you doing, my friend?
If I was any better today, it'd be tomorrow, Bing, by golly. Everything is just good here in the great state of Wyoming. Would you mind if I would ask Virginia a quick question?
You ask her all the questions you got, Harry.
All right, well, you don't want all of them. But, Virginia, you, of course, recognize what's going on in this country. We've taken some, in my opinion, some really bad turns, I should say, with regard to the Obama administration. And I think that all of us here have some pretty good recognition of what socialism is. But Virginia, you lived it, you were there, you saw it. What would you say are the primary thing to watch for that raises your antenna to say, to go, wow, this is a socialistic concept, if I ever heard one, bad direction to go. Are there one or two things that tend to make you think that and go that direction?
Lady, I believe there are several of them. Like I mentioned before, is the Obama healthcare. Obama healthcare establishes a structure, a governmental structure that will take away our freedom. And the government will have control. I don't know how many people know about those the legal structure that Obamacare establishes with identity with the government. There will a committee that will make the decisions for all of us about what kind of benefits, how the doctor's offices will work, how much the doctors should receive for their work and so forth, how they will have access to our banking accounts, to our information, and to our medical records. There will not be the medical records that the doctor will keep, the government will keep and make a decision. So that is a total violation of, doctor-patient relationship, bank and customers, you know, when the government has direct access to your accounts. The doctor's offices and hospitals and medication will be directed by the government. So again, you have rules and regulations that are identical, absolutely identical as in socialism. So with that, when you have that kind of structure, then you really have a beginning of a socialist system. When you have the government who decides about student loans and who's going to receive the student loan and who's not going to receive on everything, you have governmental control over your education. And another thing is when you have the government saying you can go to church, we allow you to go to church and you can keep your faith in the church, but when it comes to health care and other rules, you have to give up your rights and you have to do what we tell you to do. That's against another coming of socialist system. And believe me, they are not going to stop there. If we don't fight, we are not going to be allowed to go to church at all. And our churches will be transformed into socialist depositories type of stuff.
I'm really happy that you answered that the way that you did. Because when President Obama was elected, I didn't vote for him. I want that out right from the beginning. But I felt when he was elected, all right, he is President Barack Obama. He's my president. He's the president of my and our country, and I'm gonna support him. I mean, I didn't want him. I didn't like him, but I was gonna support him. He's my president. And as soon as the conversation started coming with regard to Obamacare, and that's why it was so important to me to have you lead with that, that was my first indicator that, I'm about a egg roll short of a poo-poo platter. But it didn't take long for me to recognize that this is just not good. This is going down a direction where all of a sudden the federal government is in about everything that I do, and most importantly is in with my doctor and in with my banker. And I don't know a lot of things in life necessarily, but I know in those two areas I don't need anybody else. I can foul those things up as well as anybody, and I certainly don't need the government's help.
Yeah.
Let me jump in here, if I may, real quick, to follow up on that, Virginia, with what Harry's saying. And Kurt and Sue, you guys stand by. I want to get y'all on and get so that y'all and Boyd, so that y'all can speak to. And by the way, you all have live mics, so if you've got to jump in, you can jump in at any time. But hang tight. So, you know, I said a minute ago at the beginning of the show that we had open enrollment, Virginia. And
yes.
I told you all about the increase to my out-of-pocket and my deductible. Well, here was the other change. And I don't know, you know, how many other people do open enrollment during October. I work for Bank of America, and that's when we do our open enrollment. It's in October, so they have a chance to get everything situated before January rolls around. So, I found myself doing this kind of hoping, man, I hope everybody else in the country that voted for this idiot is having to do open enrollment now, and they're getting the same little surprise that I'm getting, because I was not a happy camper last Tuesday. In fact, I was about ready to take the day off, come home, get my shotgun, and go out and go postal on a lot of liberals. I just when I say that. But that's the kind of mood that I was in.
Let me stop you just 1 second here. What I like very much what Larry says, and I agree with him, and I know that I know you, and I know that you are upset, but what Larry says, and I agree with him, is this. Like Larry, I didn't vote for Obama, and I know you did not. But I believe that every leader is allowed by God through our election to be the president. He is my president, and he is yours. I don't agree with him. but I do respect the president. So I will never say inappropriate words for him, because I do not have things against him. I have things about his ideology and his actions that make his country go into a wrong direction. And I understand what he said, but I always want to keep in conversation. So we don't attack the person. We attack the ideology.
Right. You're absolutely right. And here's the funny thing about that. This is the second time I've been called out for that this week. Earlier it was on the J.G. Wells on 6:60 a.m. I stand corrected. But it's just kind of the way I feel right now. But thank you, Virginia. You're right. I should be called out for calling the president an idiot. Even though I think he is, I shouldn't do that. And I do respect the office of the presidency. I just don't have any respect for this man. None whatsoever. I'll be honest with you. I hate him. I really do hate him. But when I did my open enrollment, and here's where I was going with this, Virginia, is we had to fill out a questionnaire. Now, the questionnaire had questions like, how do you rate their stress? One being low, five being high. Okay, well, with the exception of when I was doing this or when I'm doing or thinking about the president or something like that, I'm really not a very stressed person. I have been with this political stuff. The questions were all loaded. And then the follow-up question was, what do you intend to do to lower your stress? Will you work out once a week, twice a week, three times a week, four times a week, five times a week? There was no answer on there that I'm not going to do anything. So questions were loaded, and the way that they inspire people to have to answer these questions is they're going to give you a $500 credit towards your deductibles, which mine still went up, but I got, you know, imagine what they'd have been if I didn't get that $500 credit. So but I'm sitting here answering these questions, and I'm thinking, because we've never had to do it in the previous 5 years, who are the answers to these questions going to go to, Harry? Who in Washington, Kurt, is going to look at these questions, and the next time I go to the doctor next year and I'm having chest pains, they're going to look and say, well, Michael, you know, said he's having stress, but here we see he's clearly got an issue with stress. So we're going to negate his insurance.
Oh, they're just going to come after you with the white nets, man, the white butterfly nets, you know, if you answer those questions.
Well, yeah.
You know,
and
I mean,
and I do not believe that have anything to do with healthcare. That's great driver type of questions. I heard you, Michael. I heard the several other people saying, like you, they discovered different other questions that somebody can use it in a different way. Those are not appropriate questions.
That's true. Yeah, I remember a few years back, some doctors started asking patients if they owned guns. Do you remember that? Now, what does that have to do with your health care? Nothing. What this is phishing. It's called phishing for information so that the government can use it to, you know, combat you or whatever. It's called phishing. And that's what they do. Why would you want to know how many guns I have? What pertinence does that have on my health care? None.
Yeah. I guess unless you do something with the gun, and then it negates your insurance. That's, you know, and again, it goes back to us looking paranoid, but I got to, you know, the Census Bureau does the same thing. I refused to do the census in 2000. They finally sent someone to my house and wouldn't leave until I answered the freaking question.
Yeah, they did the same thing to me, too. I refused to answer the census, and they sent somebody to my house.
Yeah, and I kept, and the guy was a polite guy. I felt sorry for him. I'm like, sir, look, it's nothing against you personally, but it does. You don't need to know my income. All you need to know is that It's me and my wife, and at the time, it was just me and my wife. And we live in this house, and that's it. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, and some of the questions were very stupid, too. It's like, okay, well, how many people live in this house on a regular basis? And I'm like, you know, what, as to how many people live in this house on an irregular basis? You know, I mean, you know, some of them were just totally ridiculous.
Well, let's bring, Harry, stand by. Let's bring Sue and Kurt. We got Boyd online. So, Sue, come on in here. Do you have anything to say to Virginia or anything you want to interject?
Well, you know, Virginia, it's been an honor to listen to you today. And I've practiced 30 years as a registrar, and 15 of those years was in Indian Health Services, which is government run. And what Obamacare is doing now is been doing from the beginning Native Americans. And one thing I want to bring up about the Obamacare that people really have to understand, when the IRS, through the IRS, they're going to get access to our medical equipment, I mean our medical information. All this information is going to be put into a computer, and it's going to be doing statistics. And this is what that unelected board is going to use. They're going to look at costs, procedures, age, and they're going to use this data to decide what people can and cannot have. And the other thing I have to say, one thing that I do, there's a lot of historical film, and for some reason, socialists, communists, you know, now all of them who killed all these people, they like to document it. And when the USSR fell, a lot of this film came out in the open. And so I research historical film, and I put it on the, and I direct it to the Occupy Wall Streeters and the youth, because I think when you actually see a film of the atrocities that socialism leads to, you know, I'm just hoping that it will snap someone out of it.
Yeah, and of course, Tautesco, as Virginia can attest to, was perhaps one of the most brutal. I would go, Virginia, would it be fair to say that he was perhaps more brutal than Stalin, or is that
yes.
a stretch?
Yes, I believe no, it's not a stretch, and the reason he was is because he, like every dictator, he was manipulating the people outside, you know, like United States, that invited him here, Nixon and others, the Queen of England, who let him stay in the palace. He was the only communist that was, and the only reason is because he was very manipulated. He had the secret police that will silence everyone and will kill the dissidents or put under house arrest or something like this, that nobody was allowed to be known, you know, to raise their voice and everything. I'm a miracle, a God's miracle, that long before I knew that, I knew that the American embassy and other embassies were noticing and coming into the court and hearing and reporting to Voice of America and Free Europe and other places. Many people before me, they were not lawyers, but if they spoke up for something, they were just disciplined the next day. I believe that the reason I was saved is for a time like this, to make people know that it's exactly what's going to happen. And when you said that the government will have our documents, our medical documents, it's exactly what I was saying a few minutes ago about the fact that the government will decide our benefits and our
medication, how long we're going to live, because they will have everything about us. When the government has all the information about us, one is that we give control to the government. The second one is we work more for nothing because we have to support all the bureaucrats that will take care of those documents. So we make ourselves working harder, have less freedom, and becoming poorer. That's the way we go.
Well, Virginia, let's add another, in our remaining 30 minutes or so, let's add another layer to this topical onion that we like to do on Soldiers of Patriotism Radio. Not too long ago, you had the opportunity to address Sandra Fluck. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. And there is a YouTube if you Google Virginia Prodan confronts Sandra Fluck, you will find it.
Well, I'm gonna put that link in the chat and give us a couple of minutes, just a quick couple of minutes on that, and then let's bring Kurt and Boyd in here and get them in on this topical Sunday. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, she came to the school, SMU Law School, where I studied and I graduated after I came to the United States. Well, I just wanted to go there. I knew that she's coming, and I wanted to hear what she wants to say about, Obamacare and everything. And I also, it's in my heart, I feel for young college students as they go to school and they're brainwashed by people, professors or people like her. So very politely, I went to school there and I took notes. I listened to what she said, and there are also several other people there. There was in the panel. There was a professor of human values, Charles Curran. There was my professor, Linda Hayes, professor of Goodman Law School, and dean of the school, and the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of North Texas. So I took notes and everything, and then when they allowed us to talk, I presented my point of view. In the beginning, everybody was happy because I started with saying that I am the American dream, which I believe I am, and I explaining how I came to this country without knowing one word in English, no money, no nothing, and I learned English. I came to law school. I said one of my professors is right here, and I did very well in law school, and I have my law office and everything, and I raised three kids, one graduated from SMU, one from Harvard Law School, and the third one from Air Force Academy, and I concluded I am the American dream. Everybody agreed with me, and everybody was very happy about it. And my next sentence was, half of my life, almost half, I live in a free land, America, and half of my life I live in communist Romania. I came from communist Romania, and I know communists very well. And I said, Sandra, you forgot when you said about Obamacare, you forgot to tell people that Obamacare will change America from capitalist to socialist. And I give example. I said I can tell page by page where you find that the government will have control. We will be government committee that will decide our benefits, that the government will have control our checking account to take money from our checking account. The government will decide how long we'll have the medication or in where it's time for us to die. The government will establish the limit of the medication, and so forth. So I gave her the example, and I said, I know Ceausescu did the same thing in Romania, and people died. We became the poorest, almost the poorest country in Europe. People didn't have any more possibilities to medical or better health care, especially women. And what you presented is not true. You forgot to say the other part of the story, which is true. And nobody from the panel, including my professor, had anything to say compared with other people. When they ask a question, everybody jump on them. But my professors from law school and the CEO of Planned Parenthood, they were just mute. They didn't have an answer. But Senator Flores just said that I'm not quiet yet, but I should do more research. But she didn't answer any of my questions. And, of course, I didn't know at that time that somebody recorded me and put it on YouTube. So I pick up the phone and I ask them if I can download and be my YouTube. And they said, oh, please do it. You did a great job. And we want everybody to know, you know, how horrible our life is going to be. So that's the story.
Well, I've dropped both of those YouTube links into the chat, both of the chat rooms. The confrontation with Sandra Fluke, as well as the YouTube video from the first time we interviewed you, based on just which is kind of the basis of your American Thinker article. But let's bring in, you know, speaking of that panel, I heard an interview with a neurosurgeon on Mark Levin a few months ago, in which this neurosurgeon talks about units, and you become a unit at the age of 70. Now Bing and I have about right around roughly 20 years to go before we become a unit, but we've got a good friend, a good buddy of ours who is a unit right now. So let's get him on here to give us some of his thoughts. And that's our brother from the western edge of Tennessee, Brother Kurt. Get on in here, my unit buddy.
Hey, thanks, Michael. Yeah, I'm looking back over my shoulder at that number you just spoke of. They're okay. And first of all, I want to
you know I say that with a lot of love, Kurt.
I know you do, Michael. I know. I just got to respond, brother. Anyway, I want to thank Virginia again for coming in here and telling us her story as she does it so well, and keep preaching that sermon, Virginia. As I listened to you, I was thinking about, do you recognize the name Bojidar Marinov? Virginia, are you there?
Yes, I am. I didn't hear the last part. Thank you so much for your kind words.
I was asking if you recognize the name Bojidar Marinov. He's from... Well, from one of our neighboring countries over there. In short, Bojidar tells the story in many ways similar to the way you do about his escape from Romania at a terrible time. And I don't know, you just made me think of him when I listened to you there. Another great witness that's on the scene. Anyway, I want to direct thinking not in a different direction, but I want to widen the lens setting here, as it were. We're talking a lot about Obama, and I'm with Michael. I'm not going to say it, Michael. I'm just going to say I'm with you, brother. there's no way I'm going to – there's nothing that I can say to defend that man, and I won't – I won't elaborate on any of my desires in regard to his fate. But I want us to widen the lens angle out a little bit, and let's look past just the object of Obama himself. My first greatest fear of a possible scenario is that I might wake up on the morning of November 7th, 2012, and find that Obama has been reelected. I don't think that's going to happen, but the specter of that possibility is a fearsome one. My second most troubling possible scenario is that we might wake up on November 7th, 2012, and succeeding mornings after that, and have the United States of America, the people in it, give a collective sigh of relief and say, well, we got by that. No such thing as that. If Mitt Romney does indeed win the presidency, and I hope he does, make no mistake about that, I hope he does. But I am resigned to the fact that I'm going to wake up on November 7th, if he wins, prepared to go about my personal business and the business of what we over here in West Tennessee and other traditional Americans all across this nation do as a matter of course every day, and that's continue the fight. We have to fight against what this has been going on. This has been building up for 100 years now, or roughly 100 years. It's much wider and it's much deeper than just Barack Obama. It is so deep that it is into the state government of the state of Tennessee. I'm not going to say very much about that at the moment because we've got some people on next week that are going to touch on subjects that are very close to the issue that I'm thinking about with the state of Tennessee. And I'll dig some more into it then. But let's not lose sight of that wide-angle picture of this 100-year war that has been fought. We're going to have to continue to fight on a daily basis from now on for the rest of my days and for the rest of the days of Michael and Bing and all the rest of the Trad-Am folk and the BTR folk that are on here. So just remember that, folks, okay? Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, that's true, Kurt. I mean, this will not be over in November. So,
yeah,
you know,
cool.
we're not putting our hats up yet, or you know, putting our bowling shoes up yet. We've still got a lot of fight to go. It's going to take 20, 30 years maybe to get this return, if we can do it.
Well,
and
we have
to do it.
That's absolutely true. And Brother Bing, I think we all agree, Kurt. And boy, you're on deck, buddy. You're up in just a second. In fact, you may want to elaborate on this, or aside from whatever you've got for Virginia. But, you know, look, I'm like Kurt. I want to wake up and discover a president, an incoming president, Mitt Romney. But let's not kid ourselves. Mitt Romney was not my first choice. He wasn't my second. He wasn't my third. He would have been my very last choice, in fact. But it is our nominee, and he will get my vote, and I will support him.
Same
but
here.
I have my concerns. I have my concerns with President Romney, and it's going to be on us. You know, look, as much as I pick on President Obama and the Democrats and the left, I will be the first to say that we have a lot of sins within our own party that we have to be held accountable for. And it's only us. It's us that are going to correct the path that so many in our party are still fighting us against, Bing, you know? I mean, look at what we went through with Corker the Porker there in Tennessee.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not voting for him, but there needs to be a purging. I'm going to vote for the Libertarian.
Go, you were about to say Virginia?
It's Sean Crowell.
I want to say one thing. This election, what we have is a socialist and a man who wants to take us back to capitalist. It's true that it's not the best choice that we have, but the question is why? And I include myself in it. For years, we elected our representatives, and that's what we did. If we went to vote, the majority of us, we did. But after that, let's recognize, we forgot to check on them. And this is
Amen.
Why we are here. Therefore, what we have to do is to keep Obama out of the office, to put Romney and put pressure on him to do what he says he is going to do, and raise up leaders that will respond to our values. And we can do that. But fighting now and saying, I'm not going to vote for Romney, I'm going to vote for somebody else, that means for another liberal or whatever other candidate we might think. In at the end, we give that vote to Obama.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct.
We don't want that. No. We are not responsible for the result. We are responsible for convincing people to help keep America a free market America. That's what we do. When we wake up after the day after election, or we hear the results of the election and the election night, we should be able to look in the mirror and say, I did my part. That's all that we are required.
At least we can look at ourselves in the mirror. Whoever wins, all of us here, Virginia, and you're absolutely right, all of us, you, Kurt, Boyd, Sue, Rick, everybody in the chat room, Barbara, all of our friends over there, Ron, everybody over in the Tradam chat room, we can at least look in the mirror and say, you know what, I gave it my best. And then continue the fight. But Virginia, let us bring in here now our other friend from Alaska, the rough and tumble state of Alaska, the man that gets up every morning and goes hunting for bear. Boyd, did you see the interview with Sarah's father and brother this morning on Fox News Sunday, by the way?
No, I didn't. I don't get up that early.
Well, I do. I don't know why. I would love to sleep in, but for some reason I wake up at 6 frickin' o'clock in the morning with something on my mind. So I'm watching Fox, and a good thing, because I got to see Sarah's father and her brother talking about the new book that they've just come out with. But come on in here, Boyd. What do you have for Virginia, or anything you want to follow up on, anything that's been said thus far?
Yeah, just to let you know, when you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, it's still 3 o'clock in the morning here. So I'm still deeply asleep.
If I get disturbed,
I will mistake you for a bear, and I will shoot your butt.
You're just getting to the cold side of the pellet 3 o'clock in the morning.
That's right. No, what you guys were just talking about, the only thing I have to say to that, and you've all pretty much said it before, is that when we wake up November the 7th, it doesn't matter who wins. Our work is not done, and it's far from being done. And, you know, I was on another group of patriots, and one of them said that if he wakes up on November 7th and Obama wins, he's going to just quit. He says, because the country made its choice, and he's just going to let them have the government that they choose run roughshod over them. I made a not too kind of comment to him, and I called him a sunshine patriot.
Which, from the great speech that. That was written by help me out here, Kurt or Boyd.
I think it was Thomas Paine. I'm not sure.
Yes, Thomas Paine, the Sunshine Soldier. Yes, Thomas Paine.
You know, and that kind of offended a bunch of people there, because I'm a newer member of that inner circle there, and I didn't mean to offend him or offend anybody else. Of course, I didn't offend him. He knew what I was talking about. But, you know, it's like, even with a Romney victory, our work is not done. Our work is just beginning on the rebuild. We're still trying to, at this point, tear down what has been built so we can rebuild it. And, come November 7th, God willing, a Romney victory, we have 3 months of a lame duck president that we're going to have to control. And then in January, we have a man that will be taking office that we will have to hold his feet to the fire to get him to uphold his promises he made in the campaign. I pray that we don't have to do that much work, but I'm afraid we will have to. The other issue is, come November the 7th, we'll have had to have put in place in the House and the Senate a group of people that will be able to work with him, and that will be able to make the necessary changes to the laws and everything. Have been screwing us for the last 4 years, 5 years, actually 7 years since the Democrats took control of the House and Senate in 2005, I believe it was. Along with what scares me is Obamacare and the repeals that will be necessary to take Obamacare out before all of the 22 new taxes appear in our paychecks on January. How done. That is one heck of a mess for people to clean up, because of the fact that since that has been put in place, all the businesses and stuff that are out there with the taxes and stuff, they have to be, they've had to have made their changes to their payroll systems, to all of their other systems, to accommodate this on January 1st. January 1st rolls around, and or January 20th, hopefully 21st, when Romney, by executive order, repeals and or does whatever changes he can do by executive order before the repeal of the bill is in place. Now all those businesses out there have to start making changes again for the second time. And that costs them tons of money to do that.
Yeah, and you know, there's something else, Boyd, that on the morning of November 7th that we're going to have to really pay attention to. Is during the lame duck session, and Dick Morris has been talking about it. Y'all can Google just Google Dick Morris lame duck treaties. There's two treaties that we're going to have to really keep our eye on that are going to be working their way through the Senate during the lame duck. One of them's lost. The other one, I can't remember the initials for it, but Patriot Voices has been pushing it. It deals with special needs children, but it takes away parental rights. It also can affect our Second Amendment rights. So during this lame duck session, regardless of who wins, be looking at what Secretary Clinton is trying to get pushed through the Senate.
Yes, that's extremely scary.
These globalists want to put our sovereignty in the hands of the UN, which we need to defund anyway.
Yes, if you remember one of the things that I said about socialists, it's not only destroying productivity and individual self-worth, but the third one was destroying the national power to defend itself. That's exactly what they are doing, or let me put it this way: they are trying to do. we can fight against.
I would say that though America has not violated very many treaties in their past, that those would be treaties that may have been signed by the president and approved by the Senate. I believe that those are treaties that we will break and pull out of.
If you mean if they do get passed in the lame duck?
If we get past a lame duck and Romney is president, if he does not get us out of those treaties, then I would say that we have a more serious problem than we ever thought we had.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, real quick, and then we're gonna give Virginia a few closing minutes, and then do our final thoughts with everybody on the panel. So everybody stand by. But here's the thing to remember in regards to what you were saying about the person that you addressed, because sometimes, Boyd, I get down and I'm like, damn it, I'm just going to quit. But I know that I'm not. I get upset and say that I am if Obama wins. But here's the scary part about it. This election is so close this time, and it's not like we've got another McCain. We've got a real shot at this. We've got a real shot. But if we lose, I don't think any of us are going to be able to wake up and say we lost because we had an inept candidate like we did in 2008. We're gonna say we lost because, quite frankly, the majority of the Americans that voted believe in socialism. And that's the scary part about it. We can overcome Obama. What we can't overcome are the fools that vote for him. It's just that
no. Plain. No, we can't overcome that. That's the whole thing. It's the idiocracy of the people that vote for these people still. They continue to.
It
drives them up a wall.
What I really, really, truly fear is neither outcome on this election. I fear that this election is holding in its hands right now the same consequences as the election of 1860.
Elaborate.
1860.
Yeah, for those that are listening.
When Abraham Lincoln became president.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I get you, but it's interesting
that
where you're going with this.
That I believe that within a few years after this election, we may have a civil war.
Yeah.
That's my greatest fear.
It is mine, too. It is mine, too, because I don't know at what point, you know, you're going to have people like, well, I'm just going to use Bing and I for an example, because we're the kind of crazy good old boys that just might lose it. But, yeah.
Done lost it.
Well,
I should speak
to
my brother.
I'm saying this because they've already put out threats that if Obama loses, riots will happen in the streets. If that happens, then I see a civil war coming sooner than later.
Well, see, and that's how socialism works and so on. They like to use threats. They like to use innuendos, and they like to use the media. The same thing with communism. That it's just they're tied at the hip, and that's how they work. And, you know, there's such a thing as veil threats. There's also such a thing as immediate threats that we didn't see in Benghazi, I guess, you know, from this current administration, but... I don't know. I'm going to have to look at it how it goes, you know. But I still sit here and say that Romney's going to win by probably 6 points. That's the way I look at it. And I can't
agree.
Be a pessimist, man. There's so many states that are turning red now, and it's just the momentum is going. And unless he flubs it up somehow, then I don't see how, you know, this guy's going to be in for another 4 years. It just can't happen. I just don't. If people are that stupid, then I guess they deserve everything they get. But, Michael, I want to, real quick, we need to give away two of these T-shirts here.
Yeah, let's do it, and then let's bring let's get Virginia on here for because we are running quickly out of time. So let's do that. Give Virginia the floor, guys. We may not get to parting remarks today. I'm sorry, but we're like down to the last 4 minutes. So go ahead, Bing. Let's do. I'm going to let you take that, and then we'll give Virginia a few minutes.
Oh, I was thinking you were going to just give away the T-shirts.
No.
I mean, what do you think? Everybody's won one here except Boyd and our callers, well, Virginia and Harry. I guess I can give away three.
Okay. Well,
she needs to send me her email or something.
Do what? Hello?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Virginia, you want Atlas Shrugged, Who is John Galt T-shirt?
Well, being our special guest today.
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much. I'll let you choose. I am a small size for the T-shirt. I didn't hear what was the second choice, but I'll let you choose. And I'll talk with you, Michael, about the address. You might have the wrong address.
Okay, well, PM me your address, and I'll get it to Bing or Binger.
Okay.
We've only got one size coming, so it might be a nightgown for you. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking
sounds
it's extra
no
large,
problem.
Okay?
And no
Boyd,
problem.
I got your, Boyd, I got your address too, so. But
okay.
I just need Sue to call in. But thanks, Virginia. It was great talking to you again. It's always great to have you on Soldiers of Patriotism Talk Radio.
And that's
thank
because
you so
you're
much.
A soldier of patriotism.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here with all the freedom fighters. What I will say in conclusion is, maybe they will say it's going to happen this or it's going to happen that if one person or another one will win. But I think our focus should be the fact that Americans' future is on the line. So we know as Americans that it's our time, as many people before us had the privilege and the responsibility to fight for this country and give a better country to the next generation. Now we have the privilege and the responsibility to fight for freedom. That's all that should be our focus, to fight and fight clear, fight with morals, and win with God's help. I believe that we, as people of the United States, are brave people, and we were born free, and we should live free under any dictator or tyrant. By my experience, no dictator or tyrant can make a chain strong enough to keep people from freedom forever. Our faith and our fight for freedom will keep us free. And we all
Amen.
Know that we are the voice of America, and silence is complicity. Whoever
Amen,
wants
sister.
To choose that, whoever wants to choose that will change for worse their own life, and I don't advise anybody to do that. So we should be ready to stand up, to speak, to fight, and say no to socialists in America and vote for freedom and for free market and save America by voting for Mitt Romney. And we hope that we're going to win until the day when the results will be presented. Our focus should be to reach that victory, and I believe we are able to do it. And I believe with God's help, we can do mighty things. He can do in us. He can do around this country. And I believe that if we are with God and we fight for what is right in this country, we're going to win.
Right on, Virginia. Well, listen, we're down to the last, like, we're going into record mode now. So, guys, it's been a great show. Real quickly, I want to thank you, as I do every week, for joining Brother Bing and I. We are so blessed to have people that will spend a Sunday afternoon with us. Bing, I'll talk to you a little bit later. We love you all, guys. You're all princesses and princesses of patriotism. We'll see you next Sunday for our special Agenda 21 show, and I think we might have a few other guests coming on. I got to speak to Kurt about that, but we'll see you next Sunday. We're going to let Sunvolt take us out.
Now and then it keeps you running, never seems to die. Trails spent with fear, not enough living on the outside. Never seem to get far enough, staying in between the lines. Hold on what you can, waiting for the end, not knowing when. May the wind take your troubles away. May the wind take your troubles away. Both feet on the floor, two hands on the wheel. May the wind take your troubles away. But for now